KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. Emmy and Tony winner Lawrence Fishburne just received his fifth Emmy nomination for his work in Thurgood, the TV version of the one-man show on Thurgood Marshall he did. This is also the 20th anniversary of the film Boys in the Hood. Mr. Fishburne has generously consented to join me again. It's always good to have a friend on the show in this 15th year of the show. Thanks for coming back, Fish.
You're welcome. How you doing, Elvis?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, man. Always good to see you.
You too. Tell me about that. Your reaction when you heard that you got the nomination for the show, for Thurgood.
The Emmy nomination is a surprise. I was nominated for the Tony in 2008 when I performed it here on Broadway for Best Actor in a Show. An actor named Mark Rylance won that year. Patrick Stewart was also nominated that year for his portrayal of Macbeth. And people have said that Patrick Stewart and I canceled each other out.
Clash of the Titans, Thor and Odin going toe-to-toe.
And hence Mark Rylance won the Tony that year and has subsequently gone on to win some other ones. But yeah, I was very pleasantly surprised by the Emmy nomination that just came through.
Now let me ask you, though, because so much of the stuff you've done on television has been of a historical bent, and mm-hmm. It almost makes me think that Thurgood could have worked first initially as a TV project rather than the stage show.
Well, remember, the writer of Thurgood, George Stevens Jr., wrote a film for television called Separate But Equal with Sidney Poitier.
Playing Thurgood.
Right, and Burt Lancaster playing John W. Davis. But it's really kind of true what you're saying, historical nature. It did work as a piece of historical television first, and then he got very obsessed with Thurgood and his legacy and his history and wrote the one-man show with Poitier in mind, actually.
Really?
Yes. Who, I'm happy to say, decided that it was going to be a little bit too much, and so he walked away from it. James Earl Jones stepped in. He did it as a workshop piece at one of the great theaters in Connecticut, and they broke it in half, and somehow it kind of got it found its way to me. So
it's interesting, too, because that year of 92 when you went to Tribeca was also about the time of Boys in the Hood when your career was taking the shift, where you said you started moving to your fatherhood phase.
Right. Well, I started using Lawrence instead of Larry. I was doing two trains running here in New York in the spring.
When you won the Tony.
I won the Tony. Deep Cover opened a week after two trains opened. I did Tribeca. I was cast in What's Love Got to Do with It.
Oh, she also said Tribeca was an anthology series
right.
At the time. It wasn't a recurring character kind of a thing.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it was around that same time that Boys had already been out. Actually, Boys came out in 91.
Exactly, 20 years ago this year.
Wow, crazy.
But the beginning of that period where, and you've even talked about this here, mm-hmm. where you said not only did you play your father, but you started being recognized. You start to see this need from African-Americans who came to you and just sort of treated you as a father figure.
Yeah, I definitely was being responded to. People were responding to me in that way. Very much a surrogate father figure. Very much somebody who was an example for young men.
Did you have any sense when you were shooting Boys what it was going to be? I mean, how did the script end up coming to you?
No, it came to me because I was working on Pee-wee's Playhouse in 86, and John Singleton was a production assistant on that job. And he was very curious about my work with Spike because I had done School Days with Spike Lee. So Spike Lee was somebody he was looking to as an example of a director. So I told him a few stories and blah, 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 and he eventually sent a script to my agents, which turned out to be Boys in the Hood. It was about 2 years after we had worked together.
Okay.
He sent the script. I read it. And I just thought it was beautiful. I mean, you know, it was pretty flawless. And he had entered it into a screenwriting contest of some kind out there through USC. And he actually entered it twice. And so he had almost 2 years where he had been writing on it and writing on it and getting really, really good feedback from a lot of different people. So I think that's the reason why it was so airtight. I mean, it was really an airtight script. It didn't really need very much And then, of course, Steve Nicolaitis, Stephanie Elaine.
You say Steve Nicolaitis was the producer and yes, Stephanie Elaine was the studio executive at Columbia who shepherded the project.
Exactly. And Paul Hall, who also was one of the producers. They really assembled a great crew around John. And you know, we all just kind of dug in and rolled our sleeves up and went to work, knowing that we had a special piece, not necessarily knowing that it was going to have the effect and be received the way that it was. It's very difficult to know that. I mean, I haven't really been involved in anything where I was absolutely dead certain that it was going to be commercially, you know, a hit. I've only been involved in things that I thought, oh, these are really strong pieces and they deserve to be hits, or they deserve to be, you know,
noticed,
yeah.
Well, I hope this show is one of them. It's The Treatment, my guest is Lawrence Fishburne. He's recently an Emmy nominee for his portrayal of Thurgood Marshall in the one-man show Thurgood, and also this is the 20th anniversary of Boys in the Hood. But I just wonder, when you saw that script, if it just felt like to you it was something that was missing from the landscape.
Well, clearly it was something that was missing from the landscape, which is why, you know, I wanted to be involved in it. As I said, it was really beautiful. And as I've said many times, the story could be three guys from South Central LA, or three guys in Afghanistan, or three guys in Poland, or three guys in China, you know, wherever there's people who are, you know, on the bottom rungs of society, you know, who are doing whatever they think they have to do to meet the daily challenges of life, you know, you have this kind of coming of age story. It's universal in that way. It just happened to be specific to the culture in South Central LA at the time. And that was what was really unique about it, because I think John was able to present these characters in such a way that really humanized them for the first time in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
If you think back to, you know, the so-called black exploitation days and the kind of characters that were being put on the screen, representations of African-American people, you know, by and large, they were kind of superhero images.
And not many family portrayals of those things, although you were in one of those.
I was in one of the family ones, and, you know, there were a couple of family ones. There were a couple of three, four that represented family life and black life.
And the one you were in, Cornbread Earl and Me, could almost seem to be like an influence on Boys in the Hood.
On Boys in the Hood, I suppose so, yeah. I suppose so. I think maybe that one and Claudine and perhaps Hero Ain't Nothing But a Sandwich, you know, those three represented black life in a way I think that was a little more honest. But that's the beauty of it. I mean, that was really the beauty of Boys for me, was that it represented African-American people as human beings and not sort of the idea of who we're supposed to be. Because sometimes it's just, you know, we're not one thing. We're not, you know, we're not just any one thing or any type of people. We're as diverse as, you know, any group in this country.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to a man who's peopled his career with a lot of diverse portrayals, Lawrence Fishburne, a recent Emmy nominee for his work as Thurgood in the show Thurgood. And also, again, we're talking about the 20th anniversary of Boys in the Hood. I guess I just feel like, though, thinking about that performance, it was one of the first times you played somebody and made him really businesslike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
he treated fatherhood as almost a discipline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And because he was training a soldier to go out into the streets of South Central.
Yes, yeah. I think a lot of that had to do with John's own personal history, because there was a period in his life where he actually, as a young man, was taken from his mother to live with his dad. So some of that was really personal and autobiographical, I think.
But that portrayal for you, though, I mean, I don't know how much that was on the page versus the way you played it.
Again, as I say, I mean, it wasn't, the script didn't need a whole lot of tweaking. It didn't need a whole lot of work. It was pretty much clear on the page. And I suppose that my approach to it seemed very businesslike, because that's kind of maybe what I picked up in reading it. The one thing that I was really concerned about more than anything was really that the speech, you know, in front of the billboard about, you know, why is there a liquor store and why is there a gun store almost on every corner in the black community? That was the speech that I was really worried about, because I knew that, you know, we were the character was talking about a real issue that was really going on, and, you know, and I didn't want to be too preachy and I didn't want to hit it over the head. I wanted to make sure
it had something that came from him rather than the speech.
Exactly. So that was the thing I was concerned about, and And in terms of just, you know, the business-like, sort of the way that, that Furious seemed to be business-like, it may have been just that I had matured into that kind of individual, you know. It may just been that me as Lawrence may have matured into that kind of individual and was really taking my own responsibilities a lot more seriously. And so I was dealing, and I was, and so I was acting more business-like. I don't know, but I think if I had to be honest about it, I would say that it's really what came off the page at me, and it just felt like that was the way to play it. I don't know how, for example, how business-like my scene with Angela is in the restaurant when she's like, you need to sit down before I embarrass the both of us in here. Like, I'm not sure how business-like it is when I'm saying things like, you know, who dat on the phone. But
but in the way that the way, I mean, you say Furious, that's the character you play, Furious Styles, the way he's dealing with his son, Trey, he's basically treating him as if there's no room for error
raising a young
black man in South Central.
Sure, yeah. I think that's about the stakes. I think that was about recognizing what the stakes are in the community. When you look at the totality of that film and you look at the fact that, you know, here's a kid that lives across the street who's a gifted athlete, you know, who's full of promise, you know, really got the world by the tail, and he falls through no fault of his own.
Just the circumstances of the streets.
Right. And so I think that's what, that's what's coming off of me in terms of like there's no room for error, and it has to be business, and that is what comes off of the page at me, is that, you know, these children that are raised in these kind of environments, they're really precious and they're at risk, and so somebody's got to be willing to stand up and be really business about it and say, no, we're not going to lose another one. I'm not losing this one.
Yeah, because I mean, because that is the subtext of everything he does. And again, when he's with his ex-wife, played by Angela, he can't be that businesslike with her because she's got his number.
Right.
But with his son, who is still inchoate, still in this transitory period in his life, you've got to sort of set the rules. And for me, the big speech, the interesting scene, is that scene where your son tells you the story, Cuba Gooding Jr. tells the story about going out with this girl and having unprotected sex, and just the look of, please don't let this be the wrong thing to happen.
Right, right. One of the most important lines is that, is, you know, anybody can have sex, and it takes a real man to be a daddy.
And that's interesting, too, because on that block, the way you're talking about it, it feels a little bit like there's the influence in those scenes on that block from Do the Right Thing, where there's all kinds of things going on, you know.
Interesting.
That sort of Our Town kind of feel.
Oh, yeah.
But there's one father, there's one grown man on the block.
Right. There's one grown dude on the block. And that's, you know, that's really, you know, that's the filmic representation. Because really, there's more than one grown man on the block in our community. There's more than one. There's, you know, there's one guy who's a little bit grown in this area, and there's another guy who's really got wisdom in that area, and there's another guy who has wisdom in that area. And, you know, one guy might be the mail carrier, and the other guy might be the guy at the barbershop, and the other guy might be the guy that runs the gas station, you know, and the other guy might be the numbers runner, you know.
So, well, like the character you played in Kingdom of New York, who's very solicitous of the young children.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, you get it, you have to get it where you can get it, ultimately.
We'll take a break. I'll see if I can come with anything else my guest can't remember. Lawrence Fishburne, he's recently nominated for an Emmy this year for his portrayal of Thurgood Marshall. He also the 20th anniversary of Boys in the Hood. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. There's more to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I'm talking to one of my favorite people, certainly one of my favorite guests ever to do this show, Lawrence Fishburne. Mr. Fishburne is here. We're talking about a number of things, certainly Boys in the Hood, which is celebrating its 20th year this year. And also, he's recently nominated for the Emmy for playing Thurgood Marshall in Thurgood. But interesting period, that period, the early 90s, which
yes.
in being a part of School Days, mm-hmm. you were in a movie that sort of helped to ignite what was a second sort of renaissance in black film.
Yeah.
I remember even in the early 90s, there was a New York Times magazine, Sunday magazine mm-hmm. cover with a bunch of young black filmmakers on it.
Right.
And it just makes me wonder what your feeling is now. I mean, all those very personal black films that came out of that period.
Right.
And we're not seeing that anymore. I mean,
we're not seeing it in the same way. But what is important to remember is that all of those people that were making films largely are still making films. And that's the difference in terms of that first renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we can call any of the names of the people that were making those films back in the 70s, if we can call their names like they made a movie in the last 5 years. Whereas, you know, John Singleton continues to make films. Spike Lee continues to make films. You know, Reggie Bythewood has made films. There have been a number of people.
Reggie Hudlin still makes films.
Reggie Hudlin still makes films.
The Hughes brothers still make films. But those are films,
and
you're talking about an interesting period with these period, rather an interesting transition.
Mm-hmm.
These people going from making personal films to being, you know, almost like journeyman filmmakers.
Right.
But that period of that real personal film
right.
that came out of the studio, because
yeah.
I did a recently at the LA Film Festival a panel for Boys in the Hood, and Stephanie was there,
mm-hmm.
and John was there, and Steve Nicolaides was there, and they were all saying now that they couldn't imagine a film like that could come through a studio.
Probably not. I mean, there was no, again, remember 15 years ago, hip hop music was in a very, very different place than it is now. Hip hop was not mainstream music.
It was still the de facto underground.
Exactly. Hip-hop is the mainstream of popular music right now. And a lot of the stories, a lot of the sensibility, a lot of the ethos and a lot of the pathos and a lot of the aesthetic of those films is driven by hip-hop of the period. When you think about, you know, the character that Sam Jackson plays in Do the Right Thing, Senior Love Daddy, I mean, it's... You know,
he's almost an MC, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Radio Raheem. I mean, Rosie Perez's entrance in the movie, and this is like pre-gangster rap. This is not about thug life or, you know, any of this stuff that has become popular. You know, about making money and being famous. It was still talking about the conditions under which we live that were not satisfactory.
That thing with Chuck
still
D
talk
said
about fight to power.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what Chuck D said about basically rap being the black CNN.
Right.
And you feel like that because there's not something in the culture like hip-hop that's basically a kind of a confessional for filmmakers, that might be one of the reasons we're not seeing that kind of film?
No, I'm suggesting that those two things were linked.
Okay.
I'm suggesting that they were linked because remember, it was still very fresh. It was very new. Again, like you said, it was underground. It was de facto. It was rallying against, you know, it was talking about, look at me, this is my story, I'm authentic. It was almost like once upon a time, you know, black music was called soul music. Hence, if you wanted something authentic, something that had soul, something that had meaning, you were listening to that kind of music. And I think hip-hop represented that and was about that during that period. Not that it can't be about that now, but I think it's morphed and it's changed into something else.
Well, right down to, you know, having Ice Cube and Boys in the Hood.
Right. Boys in the Hood, this is a title taken from an Ice Cube tune that was talking about this particular life. And and it was not a life to be desired. Okay, whereas now, it's all been sort of glamorized.
It's The Treatment, I guess, is Lawrence Fishburne. He was one of the stars of Boys in the Hood, which is now celebrating 20 years since it's been released. But by virtue of what Cube was doing, he was romanticizing that.
I don't think so. I don't think Cube was romanticizing anything. I think Cube was giving us an honest portrayal of what it was.
But by virtue of doing it in the way he did it, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not saying it was his intention, but
mm-hmm.
he did it. It becomes like a movie. I mean, where you don't expect... fact that Jimmy Jump's going to be the guy from King of New York who ends up being the hero for a lot of people.
Right.
But he is by virtue of the way you played it.
Okay, I'll give you that. But I think the bigger picture suggests that, I mean, you know, the end of that movie, he walks across the street, the end of Boys in the Hood. Ice Cube walks across the street with a beer in his hand and disappears, and it says 2 weeks later he was murdered. And there's nothing glamorous about that.
It's just interesting, too, because that, again, was a very personal thing for John.
Right.
In the same way that all those films that Spike did, he'd make a movie every year during
mm-hmm.
that period.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a kind of excitement about that kind of thing. And the fact that you were getting to do movies from Boys in the Hood
mm-hmm.
to Deep Cover
mm-hmm.
to What's Love Got to Do with It,
mm-hmm.
it felt like an exciting time to be a black actor.
Right.
Applying your trade.
Yeah, it was an exciting time for all of us. And I also think it came out of a necessity. Because remember, the Reagan years. In the Reagan years, there was, so you have the 70s and you have that whole sort of wave of movies. And you have all of those faces that are working, right? And then the 80s comes along and Reaganomics comes along. And then suddenly, we're not really a part of the landscape anymore. We suddenly become very periphery on the landscape, with the exception of The Cosby Show, let's say.
And that's 84. It's basically like deep into it.
Right. So you've got that presence on The Cosby Show, and then you've got the presence of the folks on Different World on television, which are two really great things.
Sure.
So we've not been completely erased from, you know, the landscape. But in film,
fact, there's a portrayal of a black middle class in those things.
Right, which is great. But in film, not so much. You know, Denzel, his career has got traction in the 80s, and he's doing the work that he can do, but he can't do it single-handedly, but he's doing great work, and he's representing everybody really well. But other than that, there's not a whole lot, you know? So I think it was out of necessity, because I think a lot of people got frustrated, and I think the filmmaking community, you know, people like Reginald and Spike, you know, what was that cat's name? Maddie that came out of Brooklyn?
Maddie Rich.
Matt
straight
Rich,
out of Brooklyn.
All of those folks, I think there was a level of frustration that was really happening and became really palpable, and it just kind of exploded when, you know, once Spike made his first picture, once She's Gotta Have It kind of got the attention that it got, and I think it fired up everybody, and I think it made everybody think, okay, it's possible. What do we have to do? What do we have to do? And I think we really all had the energy, you know. I think the timing was right, you know, and we had all sort of, I think people were willing to do whatever was necessary to tell those kind of stories, to fight those kind of battles.
And the thing that period proved, and it seems to go away and come and go away, is
mm-hmm.
every once in a while studios go, oh, well, I guess black people will go to the movies to see themselves.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
So it always seems to be shocking. Oh, I guess they will. I guess
really?
They will. I guess they will go.
Right. Yes.
Which is going to be kind of being where you are, and being who you are,
right.
It's got to be kind of a fascinating thing for you to watch this thing work as a cycle instead of being an accepted fact.
Yes, as just being what it is. Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's pretty hilarious because you can look at the history of entertainment in this country and you can see that, you know, there's always somebody of color who's at the top of the heap. It doesn't matter what period of time you're in.
Yeah. And by the way, it's the
truth. And right now, her name is Oprah.
And his name is Lawrence Fishburne. It's The Treatment. We're talking about a number of things, including the 20th anniversary of Boys in the Hood. He's also a recent Emmy nominee for his portrayal of Thurgood Marshall in Thurgood. And also recently, too, you recently left CSI after
yes.
a tour there.
Yes, I was there for the better part of three seasons, basically two and a half seasons. And I decided it was time to go. They were very good to me over there, and I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot about sort of what network TV is about. And I enjoyed it because it was very filmic. You know, we got to make these 48-minute mystery movies every week. And I thought it was some of the best TV that was on network TV. But again, after three seasons, I felt it was time for me to move on and try some other things.
But you mentioned Oprah and President Obama,
mm-hmm.
and I can't help but think we're at this point now where there are African-American figures of enormous power
right.
and dignity
mm-hmm.
and respect
mm-hmm.
who are part of the culture, and
right.
not just part of the culture, part of the world that we live
right.
in. And yet, you know, we're in one of those cycles now. We're not really seeing that represented on television, mm-hmm. neither in the networks or cable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to feel a little peculiar right now, too.
Well, it's very interesting. I think that people might have, you know, some people might have a problem dealing with black people being in charge, really.
You think it's as simple as that?
I think it's just that simple. Yes, I do.
And what do you, where does it come from for you?
I think it comes from an ingrained racism that people in this country have. It's an ingrained institutionalized conditioning that people have. That sometimes people are not even aware that they have.
Because there's a thing, too, that this feeling, and that's what I end up thinking about, this presumption that only black people watch things about black people,
mm-hmm.
which clearly has been disproven, or else white sure. people wouldn't have elected a president.
Right, nor would white people be listening to hip-hop.
Or to me.
Precisely.
But given all those things, you would, and I know we've talked about this, it's I think we're both amused by the fact that we're not really seeing this in television anywhere.
No, I mean, you know, they people might have thought that, you know, my presence as the lead on CSI was an indication that that wasn't the truth, or that wasn't so. But, you know, Dennis Haysbert was the lead on a show at CBS before I became a lead on the show at CBS. And as he exited, I came in.
Yeah.
And then Forrest Whitaker was the lead on a show, and as he exited, I exited. So, I mean, I don't really know that it's one way or another. I just know that my intuitive sense of it is that, and has always been from the moment that President Obama took office, was that it was going to bring to rise certain racist attitudes and opinions in very various parts of the country. From various different people, and that it was going to manifest in ways that we have not seen it manifest before, because we are living in a time where people are not comfortable with being overtly and outwardly racist and prejudiced. People are not ready to do that. They're not ready to expose their views and say what they feel about somebody based on their cultural or ethnic background and take the heat for it. Nobody's ready to do that nowadays, because we've all learned the lesson from history that that's not really nice. But that doesn't mean that everybody can contain themselves and contain this thing that they're feeling. So they say things like, I want my country back.
I know that you're somebody who's always kind of shocked by the amount of influence that you've had. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I've always kind of liked the fact that you basically let the public sort of dictate their experience of you rather than trying to force that on them.
Mm-hmm.
But you're a man of who's recognized. You're a star. You're an award winner, mm-hmm. at least a couple of Emmys.
Right.
Tony, Oscar nomination.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see your future as being? I mean, how do you want that to manifest?
The future is bright. I can tell you the future is bright. What's really coming is, you know, anybody's guess. When one door closes, several doors open.
Well, that's a great place to end it, because unfortunately we're out of time. You know you're always welcome here anytime you want to come
back.
Thank
you so much, Elvis. Good to see you. Congratulations on 15 years, man.
Thank you. My guest is Lawrence Fishburne. He's a recent Emmy nominee, and congratulations on that for his work as Thurgood Marshall in the one-man show Thurgood. He's also talking about the 20th anniversary of Boys in the Hood. Our recording engineer at Argo Studios in New York is Paul Ruess. The show is mixed and edited by J.C. Swadek. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.